This is a CBS News special report. The 37th president bids farewell. Good morning, I'm Neil Strauser, CBS News, Washington, reporting on the CBS radio network. For the next 2.5 hours, he is still the president of the United States. But this morning, after more than 5.5 years in office, Richard M. Nixon is bidding farewell to his cabinet and his White House staff in the East Room of the White House. On the lawn outside, the helicopters already wait to take the president and his family to Andrews Air Force Base for the flight to San Clemente. Inside the East Room, CBS News White House correspondent Robert Pierpoint.
Neil, the president and Mrs. Nixon have not yet arrived here. There are several hundred people in the room now. The cabinet officers filed in about 15 minutes ago. They were followed by members of the White House staff, the official family, as it's called here. Everyone in a subdued frame of mind. You could tell that some of these people have been up long hours last night, and that some of the women especially are already on the verge of tears, and the truly emotional part of this morning hasn't even started yet. The Marine Band is in the lobby of the White House playing, and you can hear it in the... It's being piped into this room, and you can hear the band perhaps in the background now. It's playing a kind of piano music. It's not exactly a festive atmosphere. I can, for instance, right now see Mr. James St. Clair, the president's lawyer, sitting looking very grim. And now the applause for the president and Mrs. Nixon. Everyone in the room stands. They have entered the room and are standing at the entrance, taking the applause of the group here. Now a military aide moves toward the podium. President and Mrs. Nixon still standing to the applause.
Ladies and gentlemen, the President of the United States of America and Mrs. Nixon, Mr. and Mrs. David Eisenhower, Mr. and Mrs. Edward Clark.
Now the President and Mrs. Nixon, the Eisenhowers and the Coxes move down the aisle toward the podium through the standing and applauding official family. A great display of personal loyalty here, as you would expect. Many of these people in the past few days have been saddened to the point of bitterness by what has happened. That won't be mentioned, of course. Some feel that they've been betrayed. Some of them have told reporters that they think they have somehow been misled by the President and Mrs. Nixon. But right now, that thought is forgotten as the President stands on the podium and receives even some cheers. Mrs. Nixon is beside him. The president looks like he has tears in his eyes, smiling now. Speaking to some of the individuals by gesture, smiling but tearful. Some of the women in the crowd now beginning to cry themselves. Julie moves across the podium to stand beside her mother while the president simply smiles out as the tears well in his eyes, silently saying thank you. The president gives a sign of, how would I explain it? He takes his clenched fist and thrusts it upward as if to say, I'm not defeated. I haven't lost. Tricia is now beginning to cry. would almost appear as if the crowd has forgotten what brought the president to this spot and to this moment of departure, as if they don't want to remember the story of Watergate, but only the triumphs of the Nixon presidency. They won't let the president speak to them yet. Mrs. Nixon now, with a very tight smile, standing beside Tricia, tears welling in Tricia's eyes, as they were in the president's.
Well, members of the cabinet, members of the White House staff, all of our friends here, I think the record should show that this is one of those spontaneous things that we always arrange whenever the president comes in to speak. And it will be so reported in the press, and we don't mind, because they've got to call it as they see it. But on our part, believe me, it is spontaneous. You are here to say goodbye to us, and we don't have a good word for it in English. The best is au revoir. We'll see you again. I just met with the members of the White House staff, you know, those that serve here in the White House, day in and day out. And I asked them to do what I ask all of you to do, to the extent that you can and are, of course, are requested to do so, to serve our next president as you have served me and previous presidents, because many of you have been here for many years with devotion and dedication. Because this office, great as it is, can only be as great as the men and women who work for and with the president. This house, for example, I was thinking of it as we walked down this hall, and I was comparing it to some of the great houses of the world that I've been in. This isn't the biggest house, many are, and most. And even smaller countries are much bigger. This isn't the finest house. Many in Europe, particularly, and in China, Asia, have paintings of great, great value, things that we just don't have here, and probably will never have until we are 1,000 years old or older. But this is the best house. It's the best house because it has something far more important than numbers of people who serve, far more important than numbers of rooms or how big it is, far more important than numbers of magnificent pieces of art. This house has a great heart. And that heart comes from those who serve. I was rather sorry they didn't come down. We said goodbye to them upstairs. But they're really great. And I recall, after so many times I've made speeches, they've been, some of them, pretty tough. You'd always come back, or after a hard day, and my days usually have run rather long, I'd always get a lift from them, because I might be a little down, but they always smiled. And so it is with you. I look around here and I see so many in this staff that, you know, I should have been by your offices and shaking hands, and I'd love to have talked to you and found out how to run the world. Everybody wants to tell the president what to do. And, boy, he needs to be told many times. But I just haven't had the time. But I want to know, I want you to know, that each and every one of you, I know, is indispensable to this government. I'm proud of this cabinet. I'm proud of all the members who have served in our cabinet. I'm proud of our sub-cabinet. I'm proud of our White House staff. As I pointed out last night, sure, we've done some things wrong in this administration. And the top man always takes the responsibility, and I've never ducked it. But I want to say one thing we can be proud of. 5.5 years. No man or no woman came into this administration and left it with more of this world's goods than when he came in. No man or no woman ever profited at the public expense or the public till. That tells something about you. Mistakes, yes, but for personal gain, never. You did what you believed in. Sometimes right, sometimes wrong. And I only wish that I were a wealthy man. Present time, I've got to find a way to pay my taxes. And if I were, I'd like to recompense you for the sacrifices that all of you have made to serve in government. But you are getting something in government. And I want you to tell this to your children. And I hope the nation's children will hear it too. Something in government service that is far more important than money. It's a cause bigger than yourself. It's the cause of making this the greatest nation in the world, the leader of the world, because without our leadership, the world will know nothing but war, possibly starvation, or worse, in the years ahead. With our leadership, it will know peace. It will know plenty. We have been generous, and we will be more generous in the future as we are able to. But most important, we must be strong here, strong in our hearts, strong in our souls, strong in our belief, and strong in our willingness to sacrifice, as you have been willing to sacrifice in a pecuniary way, to serve in government. Something else I'd like for you to tell your young people. You know, people often come in and say, what'll I tell my kids? You know, they look at government, and it's a sort of a rugged life, and they see the mistakes that are made. They get the impression that everybody is here for the purpose of feathering his nest. That's why I made this earlier point. Not in this administration. Not one single man or woman. And I say to them, there are many fine careers. This country needs good farmers, good businessmen, good plumbers, good carpenters. I remember my old man. I think that they would have called him sort of a little man, a common man. He didn't consider himself that way. You know what he was? He was a streetcar motorman first, and then he was a farmer. And then he had a lemon ranch. It was the poorest lemon ranch in California, I can assure you. He sold it before they found oil on it. And then he was a grocer. But he was a great man. because he did his job. And every job counts, up to the hilt, regardless of what happened. Nobody will ever write a book, probably, about my mother. Well, I guess all of you would say this about your mother. My mother was a saint. And I think of her, two boys dying of tuberculosis, nursing four others in order that she could take care of my older brother for 3 years in Arizona, and seeing each of them die, and when they died, it was like one of her own. Yes? She will have no books written about her. But she was a saint. Now, however, we look to the future. Had a little quote in a speech last night from T.R. As you know, I kind of like to read books. I'm not educated, but I do read books. And the TR quote was a pretty good one. There's another one I found as I was reading my last night in the White House. And this quote is about a young man. He was a young lawyer in New York. He'd married a beautiful girl. And they had a lovely daughter. And then suddenly, she died. And this is what he wrote. This was in his diary. He said, "She was beautiful in face and form, and lovelier still in spirit. As a flower she grew, and as a fair young flower she died. Her life had been always in the sunshine. There had never come to her a single great sorrow. None ever knew her who did not love and revere her for her bright and sunny temper and her saintly unselfishness. Fair, pure, and joyous as a maiden. Loving, tender, and happy as a young wife. When she had just become a mother, when her life seemed to be just begun, and then the years seemed so bright before her. Then by a strange and terrible fate, death came to her. And when my heart's dearest died, died, the light went from my life forever." That was T.R. in his 20s. He thought the life had gone from his life forever, but he went on. And he not only became president, but as an ex-president, he served his country, always in the arena, tempestuous, strong, sometimes wrong, sometimes right. But he was a man. And as I leave, let me say, that's an example I think all of us should remember. We think sometimes when things happen that don't go the right way, we think that when You don't pass the bar exam the first time. I happened to, but I was just lucky. I mean, my writing was so poor, the bar examiner said we just got to let the guy through. We think that when someone dear to us dies, we think that when we lose an election, we think that when we suffer a defeat, that all is ended. We think, as T.R. said, that the light had left his life forever. Not true. It's only a beginning, always. The young must know it. The old must know it. It must always sustain us. Because the greatness comes not when things go always good for you, but the greatness comes and you're really tested when you take some knocks, some disappointments, when sadness comes. Because only if you've been in the deepest valley can you ever know how magnificent it is to be on the highest mountain. And so I say to you on this occasion, we leave. We leave proud of the people who have stood by us and worked for us and served this country. We want you to be proud of what you've done. We want you to continue to serve in government, if that is your wish. Always give your best. Never get discouraged. Never be petty. Always remember, others may hate you, but those who hate you don't win unless you hate them. And then you destroy yourself. And so we leave with high hopes, in good spirit, and with deep humility, and with very much gratefulness in our hearts. I can only say to each and every one of you, we come from many faiths. We pray perhaps to different gods, but really the same God in a sense. But I want to say for each and every one of you, not only will we always remember you, not only will we always be grateful to you, but always you will be in our hearts and you will be in our prayers. Thank you very much.
Followed by his family. For a moment there, he held his hand up and made a V for victory signal.
And President Nixon showing a thumbs up salute and a smile leaves the room. The president, followed by his family and the applause of those who have served here. What we have heard and what we have witnessed, whatever else one may say and one may think about it, is a great tragedy in a very human man. Mr. Nixon has said his farewells to the White House, and now he and his family are leaving. No words can really express this sight, what took place in this room. You heard the president You know that emotion overwhelmed him at times. You know that he made no apologies, gave no confessions, did not, in any sense of the word, really discuss the reasons that he's having to leave. But it was a thank you speech more than a farewell speech, a thank you to those who had served him, and that in its own way is appropriate. Now the President and Mrs. Nixon will be boarding a helicopter on the South Lawn to fly from here to Andrews Air Force Base and make that lonely journey to California and seclusion. This is Robert Pierpoint in the East Room of the White House.
We noticed, Bob Pierpoint, that Mr. Nixon, as you say, didn't say why he was leaving, except to mention that nobody in his administration profited personally. Of course, it is the political excess in the administration that has brought the objection. Now outside to Bernard Kalb.
The President, Mrs. Nixon, Vice President Ford, Mrs. Ford, just emerging from the White House on the South Lawn here. The four of them walking abreast, walking toward the helicopter Mark number one, the helicopter that carried Mr. Nixon so many times from the South Lawn to Andrews Air Force Base. An honor guard of about 30 men, both sides flanking a red carpet that was unrolled here a few moments ago on the very green grass here on the South Lawn. Now, the four of them standing at the very foot of the ramp of the helicopter here on a very gray day. Top of the Washington Monument, virtually lost and overcast. Farewells. Mrs. Nixon now going up those few stairs into the helicopter. She has gone in. President Nixon shaking hands once again. Vice President Ford. The daughters are there, Tricia and Julie. The President now waving from the very top of that very tiny ramp, the V sign, both arms in the air. Now into the helicopter, lost from view, followed by the daughters as I see it from this distance, or at least one of them. And then the President's support staff joining him aboard the helicopter for the very brief flight to Andrews Air Force Base here, then the longer flight across the country to El Toro Base, where he arrived many times, there once again to helicopter to the seclusion of his villa, Casa Pacifica, overlooking the Pacific, San Clemente, about 70 miles or so south of Los Angeles. The helicopter, the rotors have not yet begun at the far end of the red runner here, say of about 80, 90 feet or so. I see Rosemary Woods, President's secretary over so many years. As I look around and see the faces, many of them overcome by grief here. General Haig standing by, the faces taut as they watch the helicopter. The engine's now beginning. The rotor is not yet spinning here. Arms going into the air, waving. The honor guard now moving away from the helicopter to enable the rotors to begin that process. And I see a few damp eyes here on the staff of the President. I see General Haig in front of me, his arms behind his back, standing sort of akimbo, jaw jutted forward, faces taut everywhere as I look around, slightly red-eyed in certain spots. Now, Vice President Ford and Mrs. Ford walking away from the helicopter as the Red Runner is rolled up behind them. Ford, just about 10 feet or so in front of me, he too looks overcome by emotion, clenching his teeth. Mrs. Ford standing here in a blue dress, Vice President in a dark blue suit, looking at the helicopter.
And so,
as the rotors gather momentum,
Nixon about to leave the White House. This has been a CBS News special report for Robert Pierpoint and Bernard Kalb. This is Neil Strausser, CBS News, Washington.